But it was a good opener. So
my problem is I've read books.
No, you're one of those people, aren't you? The books are so much better.
It's not.
He had to tell you right away too.
It's not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like, even.
What is it going to be first? Is it going to be that I'm a vegan or I read the book? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 51 of Bad Voltage. This is the one after the live show. If you haven't checked out the live show, go and check it out on the website. It's not in the podcast feed, just so you know about this, because an audio version of one of our live shows makes zero sense.
Makes zero sense.
Absolutely. And but for this episode, Jeremy decided he couldn't be bothered, and we had to find a suitable stand-in. And I don't think we could, well, you're all expecting Popey, but it's not Popey, okay? We found the American version of Popey. Welcome to the show, George Castro. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Good to know where I stand on the Popey. Couldn't get Popey either, apparently. I get it.
Exactly. So for those of you who don't know George is, he's been a friend of the show for many, many years. George and I used to work together. And actually, when you were there, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, he was at Canonical. So we all used to work together at Canonical. George is a bit of a legend in the Kubernetes world. So you can always see him at a KubeCon if you're interested in that sort of thing. But yeah,
is that one of those things where people do Rubik's cubes in like 4.5 seconds? I've seen them on YouTube. They seem pretty
cool. That's exactly what Kubernetes is. That's exactly what Kubernetes is.
Ack, not a cloud guy.
I see Ack's expertise with technology has improved. So.
I understand. So Kubernetes is getting 100,000 of those guys doing speed cubing at once in the cloud. Okay. And right. An orchestra, apparently, which seems to be more important than I was expecting in the cloud. So.
Oh, Jesus, really? All right, let's move on. So we're going to do news for this entire show. So being the fact that George is our special guest, George, do you want to kick us off with an interesting bit of news from your list?
I think I will. I'm going to start off right away with that Sony announced the PlayStation 5 details this week. There were some rumors earlier in the week, and there are some very surprising things that I think that I was not expecting whatsoever. The first one is going to be backwards compatibility guaranteed with a PlayStation 4. Right. So the way the Xbox has been doing this is interesting. They're supporting their older 360 games on the Xbox One, but there's like a backporting program that the developer gets to involve, and they kind of, you know, like remaster it and bring it back. So not sure if they're going this route or if you'll just be able to stick the disc in and have that just work. So I thought that was really interesting as well, because like now that modern consoles are x86 boxes, basically.
Yeah.
It's all in the software now.
You know what was odd to me was this morning when I woke up at 6 o'clock, thanks to my beautiful wife having an early meeting today. So I sat there rubbing my eyes and generally hating my life. And I was reading that one of the main things that Sony are excited about with the PS5 actually is the fact that it comes with an SSD.
Yeah.
That's like one of the major things, because just mainly for load times, but also getting people into multiplayer games. It's a big deal, right? So apparently it's coming with some SSD that's faster than most other SSDs, and no one really knows what technology it's running on. So,
but they're putting an SSD in it, and this is some kind of magnificent hardware breakthrough. I'm like, I would have thought of that, right? I thought it was all meant to be, you know, incredibly complicated next generation cell processors and stuff. And they go, no, we've decided to speed it up by putting an SSD in. Here's a pro tip, Sony, put more RAM in as well.
Well, the thing is, with an SSD, every developer can use an SSD, whereas not every developer by any stretch could use that ridiculous cell processor that they built for the PS3. Yeah. Apparently it was like, you know, an absolute nightmare to run. So what other juicy stuff is in it, George?
So I do like, so the biggest thing for me, I think, is the CPU and GPU. So the last two generations have kind of been hampered by these older AMD Jaguar cores, and these are going to be based on Zen 2.
Hang on, sorry, translation, that's Jaguar.
It is Jaguar. Yes.
Civil friends.
Yes.
Just
so if you have a PS4 now, the AMD CPU in it is like a Jaguar, which has 8 cores, but they're pretty slow. They're getting kind of long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And they were like the thing that's been kind of hampering, the CPU power has been hampering the current generation of consoles.
Right.
These new ones are based on AMD's Zen 2 architecture, which is literally being announced on PCs like in July. And it's the Navi GPUs, which are 7 nanometer, which are way smaller than before. Right. So this is significant.
This is pretty new stuff then, right? Because yeah, I haven't really been keeping up with CPUs in gaming. So this would be pretty impressive for PC gaming then.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that right? For everybody. I mean, the PS4 and Xbox One, when they came out, the hardware was already kind of obsolete by the time they were launched. And right. This is like really, really more power than we're used to. Now, they say they're not going to release in 2019. So,
yes. You
know, we'll have to see. And then with things like the SSD, with the prices of SSDs coming down, you know, they have to hit a certain price point. So I think I'm surprised by the amount of power that they're saying 8K graphics, 3D audio. I mean, that's tough.
Well, the audio thing was interesting as well, because again, I was reading, so all of this was announced initially on Wired, and now a bunch of other places have been copying the information from that article. And one of the things that was interesting in the interview with the, what's his name? Mark Cerny. Right.
Who is lead system architect for the PS4.
Right. So apparently, like, they're really focusing a lot on 3D audio. Now, this has been around for a while, where you could go out and buy these like gaming headsets that would emulate 3D audio. You'd have this ridiculous little breakout box, and it would try and emulate it in headphones. And they're saying it won't require any additional hardware for this to work. So you'd be able to go and
John O'Bacon, audio engineer, explain to me what 3D audio is.
So the idea being that, you know, like when you're sat in front of your TV, if you've got a normal TV, right, you've got two speakers in it, you've got your left one and your right one.
Yeah.
And stereo will position audio using those two speakers, right? So you can have something that's to the left or something that's to the right.
Yeah, I understand what stereo is. No. I mean, I'm not brilliant at this stuff, but I know what stereo is.
I'm starting from
okay, yeah,
probably an appropriate... An appropriately low bar.
Sound is made of waves, Zach.
So with 3D audio, obviously in surround sound, you've got a couple of speakers behind you and you've got some in front of you.
That was my thing. Because I understand surround sound, you have speakers behind you, so you position not just left and right, but but in front of you and behind you and so on.
Right.
What else is 3D?
What they're
is there
doing,
like a speaker on the ceiling as well?
So what they're doing, what they're basically doing is they've designed an algorithm where the audio that's pumped out using stereo will kind of position it, because just the way that sound waves work, right, it's a combination of loudness and positioning in the stereo field, and they basically figured out a way to make it seem like the audio is actually behind you. Now, this is easier on headphones because on a room, you've got sound waves bouncing off walls and stuff.
So
like
basically,
that.
I get surround sound, but without needing speakers all around me. I can just use these headphones that I've got right now, and I get surround sound out of it.
As far as I'm aware, now that's again. This is not particularly clever.
This
I'll is give not
that.
Particularly new. Like I remember when I got my PS4, and I had a bit of a minor obsession with Battlefield, and I bought some of these 3D headphones, and it was pretty impressive. And the thing is, for like. I mean, the PS5 is going to be... I mean, the PS4 is a serious kind of console gaming machine, right? This is not like a Nintendo Switch for casual gamers playing Mario Kart. So, you know, people who play on PS5s and particularly PC gamers, they care, for example, about being able to hear footsteps behind them in some of these multiplayer games. So it makes a big deal. So... it's kind of a big deal. So what's interesting to me about the PS5 is, there's always fancy new graphics with these games console launches. And 8K, whatever. I mean, we're going to have 8K TVs at some point. That's just the way
God,
it's working.
Who cares? As if I want to play Pac-Man in 5000p. Who cares?
I do. That's a lot of pixels. I love it.
But the fact that they're focusing on, you know, hard disk speed and audio, I think is quite interesting. You know, it's
It seems, you know, like how Android had that release where they fixed battery life and stuff like that. It seems like they're trying to take a bit of a similar approach. But
and I like the fact with this that they're doing PS4 backwards compatibility. So it's not instantly go and buy all the games you had again. You can buy it and transition over to it. And it's not download only. People keep threatening the idea of a console with no disk drive in it. And I believe they've just put out a diskless PS4, haven't they? Did I see that float past in a news feed somewhere?
You're thinking of the new Xbox, I think.
Yeah. Oh, the new Xbox will have multiple SKUs, and one of them is digital only.
Right. Sorry, it was an Xbox. You're quite right, yeah. So that's it. I mean, I can't decide whether I like that idea. Because on the one hand, right, discs, right, okay, granddad, who wants that kind of thing? But on the other hand, I'm too worried about them just reaching out and going, see those games? Ha ha, not anymore. And they just vanish off of your console, which they can't do if you've got a disc on the shelf.
Well, the other thing, Mr. Elitist, living in the middle of a big city, is that most people, frankly, don't have a studly enough internet connection to be able to download, you know, like one of the games that was Red Dead Redemption was like it's 99 gigabytes.
Yeah, on PC, Gears of War 4 is like 102 gigabytes expansion.
It's madness. So, you know, if you're living in the middle of Nebraska, in the middle of the countryside, you need to go to GameStop and get a disc.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to, your internet, or you might have a capped internet, so you might not be able to afford the...
I can completely understand both of those things, actually.
But yeah, very, very exciting. This is going to be yet another, for me, this is going to be yet another case where I'll go out and buy it, primarily because I want the exciting new hardware, and then I'll barely play in it.
If they're offering backwards compatibility that doesn't include, you know, having developers to re-release their games, if you could just stick your old library into the new PlayStation and that just works and it does some magical upscaling to 4K or it runs a little better, like I think people will love that.
It doesn't even need to magically upscale it to 4K. I mean, fine, display it on your 4K television if you've got one, but technology already exists to do this, right? If you watch a DVD on your 4K television, it doesn't show it in a postage stamp in the middle of the screen with black all around it.
Well, I mean, I'm playing Super Mario Brothers on the Switch.
Exactly.
It's okay on my TV.
I can sit there and play on, you know, fine, the Nintendo Wii, but whatever. On my nice big television, I can play Impossible Mission, which came out on the Commodore 64, which had like 300 pixels wide in the screen. Oh, look, it's a 165p screen.
Also, the world's hardest game ever.
Yeah. I watched someone on YouTube do a long play where they finished the whole thing, and I watched it just to see what happens at the end. I'm like, oh, you're meant to collect puzzle pieces. I get it. I thought the goal was just to run into him, get killed by robots, and that was the point. But apparently not.
I wanted to say just one more thing. I think it's also telling on what they chose not to talk about. So they're like, and there will be virtual reality stuff, and they're keeping their cards pretty close to their chest on that one, so...
That could go one of two ways. That could either be because we've got some brilliant VR stuff planned and we're keeping it secret, so there's a big launch, or it could be that they've decided, as is correct, that VR is bobbins and they're just not going to do it.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, the PSVR sold pretty well, and it's a number of years old, and it was, from what I understand, it was a bit of a bodge to make it work on the PS4 because it's got like a breakout box and everything. I don't think it's that issue with the PS4 Pro, but the idea of, I mean, like, it seems like one of the few places where VR does have a natural home is gaming. Like,
totally.
I don't know how well it's going to work in office productivity and other areas. Like, you know, a friend of ours, he's really into VR in office productivity. And my reservation about that is just people putting a stupid headset on in an office. Like, but if you're at home, you know, in your mother's basement, playing on your PlayStation 5, then it's fine. So,
but more important, you know, just ordinary people, which is where gamers are now, right? It's not all people in your basement. But,
no, that's not true.
But ignoring that point entirely, if the VR stuff does take off, one of the things that we saw when they basically built streaming into this generation of consoles, streaming took off enormously. I mean, fine, lots and lots and lots of people were doing it on PC before and still are, but it gave a really big boost to things like Twitch. You would think that building VR into the console from the beginning, from the outset, as a base level concept for it, would ideally really help with that. But then you would think that might have happened with motion controls after you had both the Wii and the Kinect. And
yeah,
that didn't happen. So, you know, maybe it's a moonshot still.
Yeah.
Okay. It's,
very, very cool. Do you think they'll actually bring it out in 2020? Or do you think it'll actually secretly come out later this year?
No, it's going to come out in 2020.
I think so.
People have only just got dev kits for it.
Right. No, that's a fair point.
I think we'll see the cheap Xbox and the PS5 next year.
Because this is a long time to announce this. You would have imagined that the an interview with Wired is step one on your new marketing campaign. This is like your pre-buzz marketing.
Yeah.
And if it's not coming out for another 10 months or 11 months, that just seems bonkers. And Sony often want to try and hit the Christmas season. So I don't entirely believe that it's coming out next year. I think they may try and get it out this year.
I
don't know.
I don't agree with you. But
Sony could go back to the days of the Mega CD, where it comes out with five shit release titles.
Well, I think people have learned that. I mean, obviously, games that come later in a console's lifetime are better because people have grown to understand and know the hardware more and have learned from others and so on and so forth. So the launch titles are never the best. But
right.
I think they've learned from the idea that you launch with rubbish titles.
Yes.
I mean, this stuff's... Go on.
I was going to say, depending on what the backwards compatibility might be, this year's Christmas message might be, buy as many games as you want. They're going to run great when this new console's out. You don't have to care about console generations anymore. So parents, instead of getting them a new console, buy 10 games instead.
Yeah, but people are already going to have their PS4. It's not like, you know, it's going to randomly burst into flames.
Oh, yeah, true. True. But, you know... I know how people are. They're going to be like, oh, Spider-Man is so great. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
But then, yeah. have you got any spare HDMI sockets? I mean, if you bought another console now, are you able to plug it in, or do you have to choose which of them gets consigned to the back bedroom because you've now run out of HDMI sockets?
Well...
I do not want to publicly state how many HDMI-capable devices at all times and operating systems.
Yeah. Tell you what, you tell our audience that, and we'll tell them your address. Should we move on? Because I can hear the audience groaning at how long we've talked about this.
About the PlayStation 5, yes. Okay, next thing, Jono.
Apparently, so I saw quite an interesting article on The Verge, which basically said that... a recent study was done into employee wellness programs, and it seems like some of the data is suggesting that they may not be particularly effective. From the article, it says that the study adds to the growing body of research suggesting that workplace wellness programs aren't particularly effective. Last year, researchers published results from a randomized workplace wellness study at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Of the 5,000 people who participated, about 3,300 were randomly assigned to be offered health screenings and wellness education. The study concluded that the program didn't really have much of an effect on total medical spending, employee productivity, or health behavior in the first year. Now, these wellness programs, we've covered this before on Bad Voltage, and we've talked about digital wellness quite a bit. We've talked a little bit about wellness programs at work, and it's quite the newfangled fad right now, particularly in Silicon Valley, that you get all of these perks that it's an investment in you as a human being, and having a healthy relationship with work and going to the gym and all that kind of stuff. So this was quite interesting to see. I would have thought that there would have been more of an effect. What do you guys think about this?
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting that one of the ideas, as you say, it's rather a fad at the moment, but attempting to do something like this seems like a good idea, but equally, it seems to be borne out that this isn't the right approach. That doesn't mean that the goal is a bad one. Attempting to look after your employees' well-being is a good idea. But
it doesn't stop it being the right thing to do.
Yeah, but this may not be the right approach to. I mean, as you say, one of the interesting things about this particular study is a lot of criticism about previous, because there have been studies before which show that they don't work, right? But a lot of the criticism before has been, yeah, the reason it doesn't work is because the people you want to help are not the people joining it. You do an obviously right. No one's going to do a compulsory wellness program, right? So you do an optional wellness program. All the people who already go jogging 5 times a day and have a Fitbit go, oh, great, I'll join the employee wellness program. That sounds fantastic. And don't get a lot fitter because they were already fit. And all the people who really ought to be joining it don't want to join it because going jogging is terrible. So they don't do it. And therefore, it doesn't actually help the people.
I think that depends on helping.
Don't everybody get the perks, but it's just some people don't use them, right? Isn't that the point?
Yeah.
It depends on the program, I think.
Right.
So my wife does this as a living, and I know that she would, I don't want to misrepresent her because she's a psychologist and I am just a guy on the internet. But she tells me all the time on every time programs like this help people. And in her specific program, it's like a benefit, but sometimes it's, there's a certain life change or something, you might need to go check in, with whatever program you have and talk to somebody or whatever.
Right.
But I, not coming from this field at all, like you could have told me, I'm just stressed out. I've talked to somebody, this doesn't work or whatever. But from talking to the people that actually do this every day, I would have to dig into these results a little bit more and things like that. But I do feel that that they are useful for a lot of people.
I've been doing some reading around the subject. As I say, one of the big criticisms was that it's focused on other people. Another one is that they tend to be very one-size-fits-all programs like this. It's here is the body of perks which you have access to and they're the same for everybody. But... And the other thing is that it depends on what you're trying to maximize, right? If whether you're trying to maximize people's health or their happiness or their productivity, which are three different things and often three quite mutually exclusive things.
I think that's a good point. Like, what is the point and the design of these programs, right? Because that's not entirely clear. Like, I've worked in a few companies now that have had various levels of these kinds of programs. And it seems to be more about, here's this cool thing you can use if you want. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't seem to instill, like, to me, part of the challenge here is, I think there are two elements to this. There is one, the access to resources that help you to maintain a healthy lifestyle, right? So a good example of that would be gym membership.
Having a gym in the office, making it so there are showers in the office. Things like that are, as far as I can tell, they can't be a bad thing. The worst that could happen to you is that you have access to these things and don't use them and then nothing changes. They are either a positive or zero. It can't be bad to have access to a thing, I don't believe.
Yeah, and I think my concern is, like, who's running some of these programs, right? Like, if it's... Like, I would want to see, like, an accreditation, or is the program you're signing up, based on science? Or is it like, we signed up Jono Bacon's life coaching thing to help you with your, help you grieve your dog's loss or whatever. It's like, hey, wait a minute. This is just, what I mean? Like, some of this stuff is very serious for some people.
Well, and that's kind of like, I think access is one element. So having access, like healthy snacks in the office, access to the gym, whatever else. But then I do think the second element to this, which isn't spoken about enough, is a healthy relationship with work and work-life balance, right? So this is something that is it's amazing to me how much this varies. Like, for example, getting rid of a culture where people feel like they can't leave the office until the boss has left.
Ah.
Right? That kind of thing. Not like everybody's going to always try and celebrate, like, oh yeah, I'm working harder, I'm going faster, I'm doing this. Like, that's just human nature. You're never going to really get rid of that. But I think companies being able to celebrate the right balance of this. Like, I've worked with some managers who do a really phenomenal job of balancing out, like, they're working hard, they're working for the interest of the company, they're going above and beyond, but they're also not slavishly only doing that. Right? Because people mimic other people. So their teams are going to mimic those managers' behavioral patterns.
And if you've got a really unhealthy behavioral set of behavioral patterns, then you're going to get really unhealthy team members.
You are. And let us with that deftly segue into a question from George, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so this guy, Jack Ma, he's the president, CEO, whatever it is over there, of Alibaba. And there's been some pushback from people in the Chinese tech industry about what they call the 996, which is you work 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. And he came out with statements that this is really good if you're really passionate, like it's not really a problem. And it kind of puts into the forefront about this whole work-life balance thing. Like, I can't even imagine 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week.
Oh.
Like, even when I was in the military, that's like, because at some point people just start to break down. Would you want to work with anybody who's working 12-hour days? Like, I can't imagine.
No.
I don't know. I live with someone.
it's funny because I think, like, those of us who work in cloud and stuff, we kind of like, the idea is like to be so smart that you automate yourself out of a job and using all these tools to make things simpler for yourself. But on the other side of the economic coin, someone's got to make all those iPhones, right?
Right.
So like, what's the balance there? And
man, I hate this with the heat of a thousand suns. It's, I mean, you can give all the rational reasons why it's a terrible idea. You know, working longer hours makes you much more prone to slip-ups, and there have been a million studies demonstrating this, and every major disaster that's happened ever, you could look there and go, look, there's an overworked manager in the middle of it who made a call they maybe shouldn't have done because they were on the 53rd hour of their 40-hour week or whatever. And the fact that people work longer contributes to climate change, and we could fix a lot of that if we didn't make people work longer hours, and people who work more hours are less satisfied with their lives and all of that kind of thing. But the thing I hate most about this is the fact that he uses the word passionate, because it's basically attempting to imply that if you don't want to sell your soul to the company store, like the Tennessee Ernie Ford song, then you're not properly passionate about your job. You're some kind of work shy layabout. It's attempting to recontextualize the conversation, so you're doing a wrong thing for not wanting this.
But this is why he's wrong and you're wrong, right? Is what you just rattled off there, including what he said, is such a stream of generalizations, right? Like, you know, this notion that, you know, more accidents are caused by overworked people, or that you know, people are unhappier if they're working longer, or that the only people who can be passionate are the people who are working longer. I think this massively depends on the individual and the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And it depends on what you're doing. Like, I'll give you one small example that I've learned about myself, right? Like, first of all, let us not forget all three of us are fucking workaholics. The three of us are, right? Language, you try to deny this, but you are.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
The difference is that I think we define different types of activity as work, right? So, for example, one of the things I've learned about myself as a consultant is during the day, I work very hard. Like, I work from 9 until 6, and I'm just solid. I don't, you know, I'll break for lunch. I'll take a couple of breaks here and there, play a bit of guitar, whatever. But I'm generally pretty consistent, right? You know, sometimes I'll take an afternoon off here and there, but that's the benefit of running your own business. Now, I will often spend time in the evenings doing some work, but what I generally don't do is I generally don't do client work in the evenings, because that feels like work. But what I will do is I'll update my website. I'll write a blog post. I'll work on a script for a video or whatever it might be. It'll be things that are technically classified within the banner of work, but they're things that I enjoy doing in the evening. That's, do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but that's not at all the point. I got no problem with you doing that. I got no problem with Jack Ma doing that. I got no problem with people who work for Jack Ma doing that. My problem is if you stood up and said, everyone should be doing this, it'd be better. You're not pushing the way you work as the thing that other people should do. You're not even pushing it as a model to be emulated. You're saying, this is what's right for me, and so right, I'm going to do it. I don't want to condemn someone who chooses. And you realistically can say you choose of your own free will to work those hours. That,
right,
I don't believe that anyone who has a boss can say with 100% certitude, I choose to do it like this. There's always going to be influences from the company around you. So
there are.
I would take with a pinch
very
of salt.
Very different set of circumstances.
Yeah, I would take with a pinch of salt anybody in a job who says, no, I choose to work like this. The company wouldn't mind if I didn't. But you literally can say that because you work for yourself. But what but you're not promulgating this idea.
But the thing is, though, is I haven't read the Jack Ma stuff, but I'm guessing that he's not saying that everybody has to do it this way. He's probably saying that this is what it takes, which is a pretty common entrepreneurial statement that comes out of a lot of people. You know, this notion that entrepreneurs don't take holidays, they don't take time off. And I think a lot of this is there are certain people who, would not want to work 12 or 14 hours a day. There are some people who
just to clarify, before you go on, Jack Ma called the 996 schedule a huge blessing and said workers should consider it an honor rather than a burden. If you join Alibaba, you should get ready to work 12 hours a day. Otherwise, why did you come to Alibaba? We don't need those who comfortably work 8 hours.
What? A lot of this, I think, is massively cultural because those kinds of working hours in China, very, very normal.
But that's exactly what the whole point of what George is bringing up is not just is this thing a good idea, it's that there's currently a huge pushback from Chinese people about it. When you say it's usually cultural and that's normal, people there don't want it to be normal.
But again, they're being told it's normal. Again, hang on. You're making generalizations. People don't want this. People do this. Like, I think it varies. Sure, there's no doubt. I don't believe for a second the poor people who work at Foxconn who are putting together iPhones, I don't believe that they necessarily want to be working 12 or 14 hours a day. Likewise, I don't believe that they want to jump off the building and land in a net. So, like, there's an unhealthy work environment. But in terms of people who are running startups or people who are in executive positions in companies, I absolutely believe a lot of those people want to work those kinds of hours because basically, for them, it's not work. It's like it's their passion, it's their dream, and they're living it, right? In the same way that, you spend probably 90% of your day sat in front of a computer. Now, some of it you're working on stuff for your company, and some of it you're just having fun and writing code and hanging out with people and whatever else. But you're still engaged in your passion, in what you love doing. So I think we can't really say in a general statement, this is right or wrong for everybody. Right, like it really depends on the person.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong for everybody. Jack bloody Morris.
But I get the impression that, and again, I haven't read his stuff, but I get the impression when he's talking about that, he's probably talking more within an entrepreneurial setting.
He isn't.
If he thinks that for people who are putting iPhones together at Foxconn, that's ridiculous.
If you join Alibaba, you should get ready to work 12 hours a day. Otherwise, why did you come to Alibaba? We don't need those who comfortably work 8 hours. He's not talking about the board.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. He's not talking about the board here. If he were to say, if you join Alibaba's executive board, you should get ready to work 12 hours a day. I go, fine. I wouldn't want to be your CFO, but get stuck in. That's, you know, your top level executives, fine. They work 12 hours a day, but then presumably they cash out with $100 billion at some point, right? But he's not talking about that. As far as I can tell, he's talking about the people who put shit in boxes for Alibaba. Yeah.
It's like, be 66, more passionate 000. About gluing this screen to this phone.
Well, there's only 66,421 people working at Alibaba, so that seems like a reasonable statement.
Only 42 million left to make, and then you can take a break. This solves your... What? It's like, how am I going to have time to play a PS5?
Right.
That kind of solves everyone's problem there.
Right, it's okay anyway, because you have to wait 145 years for the games to download, so that's right.
So it sounds like we overall think that that's, in a general sense, that's a whole load of bollocks right there.
Good luck with that, Jack Ma. Good luck with that.
The thing which really stuck out to me is the People's Daily, right, which is the Chinese state newspaper, wrote an editorial where they said employees who object to 996 can't be labelled as slackers or as not fighters. Their real needs should be considered. And if the Chinese state newspaper has come out against your business plan. Just how far from the pack have you strayed?
Part of the problem with this, and this, we've talked about this on Bad Voltage before, and we'll move on in a second, but is there is just this glorification of work. Excess when it comes to this kind of stuff. Like, and we're all guilty of it. Like, how many times have the three of us told stories of Richard Stallman sleeping under his desk at MIT?
Yeah.
Like, we've all told these stories. You know, and it's, and that to me is, I don't know how much of that is bad habits and how much of that is human nature. It's probably a bit of both. So
yeah.
Anyway, this is a great topic for the forum. So people go and share your thoughts on this. I would love to hear it on community.badvoltage.org.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
What's next?
Right. I got one.
Yep.
The UK is currently in the process of bringing in content filters for adult content and things like this, and a countrywide great firewall kind of vibe.
I've heard of this. Can you describe it a little bit?
My thing is not about this, but it prompted a different thought.
Okay.
We could go backwards and forwards on whether we think that that's a good idea from a countrywide point of view and how they're going about it, brackets terribly, close brackets. But I think most people would say that it's perfectly reasonable for the people they're intending to protect, parents, they're intending to protect children here, that a lot of parents do put some kind of content filtering or limiting of internet time or screen time for their kids. And I wondered what you two do and what other people do in this. I didn't really experience this because my daughter is now 19, so it wasn't as much of a problem. She wasn't permanently wired into the internet from the age of 4 like people are now. But I know some people will limit the amount of game console time on it. You know, you're allowed 2 hours a day, or you're allowed this much time on the internet per day, or whatever. Or may say, okay, you can use some websites and not others. Now, again, when I did this, my daughter was old enough that I was able to talk to her as a young adult, so I was I was more attempting to educate her about being aware of the problems online. You know, don't give your name out, don't talk to, be careful talking to people you don't know. Violet Blue wrote a really good book called The Smart Girl's Guide to Internet Privacy. Which I bought for her and was invaluable, especially since I can't really give advice on this because, first of all, I'm not a woman. Secondly, I'm not a 13-year-old woman. And thirdly, I don't. When I was 13, you didn't have this at all. People weren't really getting hassled on Prestel like they are on Twitter. So I didn't really have the experience, but Violet Blue does. And so I was able to do that. But I'm interested in how you've gone about this, what you've... you know, what, if anything, you've put in place. Not looking to say what's right on a global basis or what other people should be doing. This is more an inquisitive thing. What are you doing and how have you approached it?
Is this a big thing for you, George? Because, I mean, your kiddo's pretty young, so...
Yeah, so Rafi's 2, 2.5. I don't know how I'm in trouble because I don't know. We got him a Fire tablet, actually, but it was more for us than for him, right? Where it's like you're traveling... And dude needs his Peppa Pig, and he, you know, he's gonna go nuts.
Dude needs his Peppa Pig. The other Aerosmith song.
So we had that, and then
this is not that kinda... guy who needed chicken nuggets and got 18,000 reach, 18 million retweets, right?
Sorry, carry on, George.
So I mean, and we do that, and we rely heavily on actually like YouTube Kids and stuff for more. More of the content that he watches, like on TV, and I watch it along with him and stuff like that. When it comes to actively blocking things, I feel like my wife and I kind of have like a hard disagreement. I've always been I kind of grew up around BBSs and things like that. So like I turned out okay. And I remember when computing and networking became popular, all of a sudden, you know, Doom is going to ruin your life along with Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. So I've seen people overreact. So I don't want to be... I don't want to be actively blocking as much as I want to ensure that my kid knows how to navigate the technology. I more shut him off at 8 because I don't want him to watch a tablet and get wired and then he can't go to sleep. The content, not so much because we're kind of picking the content for him at this point.
Similar in some ways with us. I mean, Jack is six, so he's obviously a little bit older than Rafi, and he's at an age where he is making more opinionated choices about what he wants to see and what he's interested in. And we've taken a couple of approaches to this. One is he has a couple of devices. He's got an Amazon Fire tablet as well, which I think if you are a parent and you have a kid, it is the best thing you can possibly buy for your kid. It's amazing. It's a really rugged little tablet. It's got a ton of content that's all curated for kids. It's a pretty safe environment for them. There's a lot of educational stuff on there. And if you break the tablet, they'll send you another one.
Don't you have to watch out for them getting the pin wrong so many times that it locks the tablet out for 25,000 years? Did you see that?
I heard about that, yeah.
Some guy's iPad and his toddler just hit the buttons on it so many times, and it doubles the lockout time every time you get it wrong. And it was locked out for something like 12,000 years. It was brilliant. But I interrupted the serious point. Go on.
So the Fire Tab's good, but we have a Switch as well, a Nintendo Switch, which I think for a games console for young kids is amazing. And it's got built-in parental lock, and you can control it from your phone as well. So I can not only see when Jack's, you know, his playing habits and how long he's been playing, but I can also see when he's trying to type in the PIN number and getting it wrong. Lol. The key thing, I think, is not just screen time. I think a big chunk of this is what they're watching. So the difference, of course, again, comparing your daughter, Neve, Ak, and Jack, is that when Neve was growing up, she didn't have an endless access to content, whereas Jack has his Netflix profile, and he can watch pretty much whatever he wants. He'll never get through it all. So for us, a big chunk of this is him being able to watch things that he likes watching, such as Trolls, which he loves, which aren't particularly educational, and then him also watching some shows like Sid the Science Kid and Bill Nye the Science Guy and Storybots, which are kids' shows that have got an educational component to it. So what we'll do, for example, we'll say, okay, you've watched enough of, you know, Trolls, now you're going to watch something else. I think that the content choice is as important. So
yeah, I'm a science nerd. I mix in dinosaurs. I mix in Storybots because they talk about like the planets and stuff.
Storybots is great.
Yeah, and they do a really good job where it's like a hip hop rap, but it's like so it shouldn't be that good. Like when we were growing up, like it was either when I was growing up, it was either Mr. Rogers or that was like it. There was no science cool stuff on television, and if you miss your favorite show on 8:30 Saturday, you had to wait seven days.
It's quite interesting. Can I just go back for a minute, because I haven't heard about this? So are they really trying to like put a firewall up and block porn in the UK? Is that what's happening?
Kind of, yeah. They've just put out the Department of Culture, Media and Sport have just put out their white paper on online harms. Which is, and that's kind of about limiting social media, right? We've talked a lot in the show in the past about requiring social media platforms to take more responsibility and so on and so forth.
Right.
Also, separately to that, they're also trying to bring in an adult content block where you will have to demonstrate that you're 18 before you can look at porn, which is basically going to involve...
Oh, so basically...
Providing a credit card number or something to prove that you're 18.
Right. So it's not about blocking porn per se. Putting a provision to stop kids getting access to it, essentially.
Which seems
reasonable to me. I mean, blocking porn is a whole separate censorship question, but making sure that kids don't have access to it. Those kids should work for it like we did when we were younger.
The issue here, I think, is how much... how it's an awkward conversation for people to have, because a lot of people don't want to say, yeah, I'll ring up the government and say, please, I'd like to look at pornography, which means that the people who actually
wants to do that,
precisely, which means that it denies you that, but it's not actually illegal or anything. They're just basically trading in embarrassment, and it's an unpleasant conversation for people to have. So it's a de facto block, even if not a de jure block. And that's what's not good about
it. But maybe it's actually an interesting question. How do you provide proof in a really anonymous way? It's like one of the reasons why I think a lot of people don't sign up for porn websites is because they're worried that someone will eventually, even if they can afford it and there's no financial burden on this, they're worried that people will find out about it. There's a shame component. But I wonder if there's a way in which, you know, an 18-year-old person can indicate their age online in a way that is unambiguous.
I do not see that there's a way of doing that without some kind of central authorizing authority.
I see smart high schoolers or whatever it is you have over there making a lot of money on their classmates figuring that stuff out. That stuff never works. I mean,
it's the modern fake ID.
Yeah. it totally is. Yeah, exactly. I mean, ask yourself how well has you have to be 21 before you can drink alcohol worked in the States? Not brilliantly, in my understanding.
Yeah. I know when I hit a UK website, because you guys still have that stupid cookie dialogue. Is this going to be like right next to it? Right. It's like, how's that working out for you?
Exactly. It's funny. Exactly how it's all going to work is not clear.
It's funny. A person who shall remain nameless, who Ack has certainly met, who's a friend of mine over here in the US, and I don't think George has met him, but he was drinking in the same bar for a number of years underage, and then it was his 21st birthday, and he celebrated it in the same bar. And the bartender said, what's the big celebration today? It's like, it's my 21st birthday. It's like you've been coming here for 3.5 years, man. So yeah, I don't think it works very well.
Bartender of the year.
Actually, that bartender is quite cool. He still works there. Yes. Obviously not condoning underage drinking.
Well, I am. I think it's fine.
Actually, I am. It's a lot of fun, but not too underage.
Not too much to excess is the point. The age is not really the issue, in my opinion. But yeah.
That is true. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. And this is something else where I'm interested in how other people do this. Like, again, not trying to dictate or prescribe public policy here. More kind of how have you personally dealt with this? Where do you personally draw the lines?
Yeah, right. Plus I think there's a difference between like what content am I going to let my kid consume is one thing. But interacting with other people on social is going to be weird. Like, I have no idea how I'm going to handle a bully at school, you know, like all that stuff. I feel like I have enough information from a lot of people on how to handle things like, you know, what's appropriate movie for your kid to watch versus, you know, how, if he's going to post something embarrassing when he's a teenager and then he's going to have to deal with it the rest of his life, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how you deal with, I don't know, bullying on WhatsApp as well as when you're at school. I mean, I don't, none of this really came up. And Neve and I have had quite a lot of conversations about this sort of thing anyway, but none of it really came up until she was sort of, you know, 14, which is a much different conversation with someone as opposed to with someone who's 6.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, Jack is actually just at an age now where he's starting to wrestle with a little bit of this. And one of the things I'm trying to instill in him is a healthy level of who gives a fuck what they think. And, you know, helping him to determine between, you know, a kid, like there was a kid who was playing soccer at the weekend and there was a kid who said something mean to him. And Jack and I had like a snigger between us because Jack was like, who cares what he thinks?
Yeah.
I was so proud. It's also difficult because you want to make sure that they don't just, you know, ignore everybody.
Yes. Well, it's also easy for governments to say, oh, bad things are happening to our kids. We could just ban porn and bad video games and violence and all that stuff. But like actually figuring out how to deal with these kind of social things in society is like really hard. So
yeah.
Hey, you know what? Let's start with just banning porn.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Then you say, how are you going to ban porn? It's like, oh, we'll just run a search for the word sex and ban all websites that mention it. It's like, hey, yeah, right.
Yeah.
People want to read stuff about what's going on with themselves and you're banning it because it's adult content.
I have a prediction that that England is suddenly going to sprout hundreds of thousands of journalists who are doing quote unquote research.
Well,
into various elements of human sexuality.
When this stuff gets a bit more detailed and they start explaining exactly how they're going to manage this, I'll bring it up on the show and we'll look into it.
Yeah, yeah, we should dig into this.
BritishVPNporn.com. I'm already starting a startup around this.
Well, now that speaking of VPNs, George. Yep.
Yeah, so I got this one. I thought this was interesting. Cloudflare, who offers 1.1.1, that's a DNS server, is going to start offering free VPN for everybody. So this is based off of the WireGuard protocol, which is going into the Linux kernel. I don't think it's in there yet, but it's not the actual WireGuard software itself. So what they're basically saying is if you have our app, get on the wait list, and then your phone will always talk to via VPN to our data centers, which are spread all over the world. I want to say 175 or something like that.
Right.
So what's interesting here, I thought this was interesting because VPNs, I don't know how many of you hang out with like other normal people who aren't techies are always like, hey, what? I keep seeing these ads for these things called VPNs, and there's a lot of shady stuff happening there. And
right,
don't do any of that crap. And then these guys show up and they're like, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to give it away for free. They kind of announced it on April 1st, similar. They're kind of marketing around it. It's like going to make the impact that Gmail did when it was, you know, first.
Right.
First announced. So I thought
that
was interesting.
Not sure I'd go that far, but yeah, I see that point.
Yeah. But I think this is, you know, speaking about privacy and all that kind of stuff that seems to be on everyone's mind lately. I feel like this is an area where I think you're going to see a lot of activity. Innovation, maybe yes, no. So we'll see. I just thought it was interesting. I am on the wait list. I am user. I'm 174,671st on their wait list.
Wow.
So yeah. Well, they can't roll it out at once. If you get the app, you install on your phone, and it'll put you on.
Surely they can roll it out though at once. Isn't that the point of Cloudflare?
No, they specifically, absolutely said that. Yeah, we could do. What they wanted to do was put it out on. According to their blog post, which is obviously slightly rose-tinted view of the whole thing, but they wanted to just pull the big red lever on April the 1st and go, ta-da, here it is for everybody. And their site reliability engineering team went, no, don't do that. It'll be the end of the world. They went, fine, okay, we'll do a staged rollout, no worries. The only reason I'm not on the waiting list is because I'm temporarily using an iPhone because I dropped my other phone. So,
right.
And I'm assuming that if I get on the waitlist, I'll get to the phone on the iPhone, and then just the day that my repaired phone arrives back again. So I haven't.
Also, it's not like VPNs don't already exist. Like, just wait for it to come out and then move away from your existing VPN.
It's pretty hard to use one on an iPhone.
How? Although, just install ExpressVPN.
Yes, you can install that app, but then you've got, and this is free, is the other thing.
Right, and ExpressVPN is almost free.
No,
I mean,
do you all use VPNs?
I don't.
I use it all the time, but I use it primarily when I'm on site with
a client. Because you're on client sites, yeah.
So
yeah, I don't because I don't need to. As far as I can tell, VPN customers are people who care about privacy, people who want to use the original purpose of a VPN, which was being a virtual private network, connecting two or three machines on different networks into one single independent private network, which is what Jono's using it for, and people who want to conceal their shady behaviour, whether that shady behaviour is torrenting films or downloading games or, you know, the half dozen actually dodgy people who get held up as an example about why no one should be allowed to use a VPN because that makes you a criminal. And this, it's not clear to me who Cloudflare are going after with this.
Probably all of the above.
I'd be surprised if they're going after the...
I doubt they want the shady people.
Well, this is the point, right? But that's why... a lot of the VPN, the sort of where George is talking about, you meet people who go, I keep being told to use a VPN, why am I doing this? A lot of the people I see saying, yeah, you need to use a VPN, is because they want to be able to torrent films with impunity, you know?
Right.
Yeah. There is definitely, there is a perception, I think, around people who do know what VPNs are. I think they think of it in the general public as that shitty thing I have to click on before I log into my company's decrepit accounting system.
And Cloudflare explicitly call that out as a thing they want to fix. Bear with me, I'm actually going to find the quotation, but it was something along the lines of, wouldn't it be nice if you looked forward to signing into your company's VPN? And so they're exactly going, but that is essentially their business model, right? It's free for everyone who wants to use it, but what they want is companies to start getting on board with this and making their internal VPN use easy and paying Cloudflare for it rather than paying whichever other VPN provider they're using.
I think if it's transparent, like if we tell people, you know, like I envision someone in my family who is in tech, whatever, what do I need to do for privacy? And I tell them, install this app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's, you'll be good. Because for me, it's always guest networks that you're on. You know, like every hotel you go in, their DNS server is terrible, and then you sign in your thing, and then everything's twice as fast.
Yeah.
The thing as well is, I'm a Cloudflare customer, and I think they do a fabulous job. If anyone can do this, it's going
to
be
good. I pretty much trust them to, I mean, they've said, you know, we've set it up so we can't watch the data and so on and so forth. And I largely trust them to be making a serious attempt at this. I think if it really does take off, then they'll be in a position where they're controlling an awful lot of the flow of information, and that in itself worries me. But Cloudflare are a reasonably trustworthy company attempting to pull this off.
Yeah.
Which makes me slightly less worried than I otherwise would be.
Indeed.
I will let you know in 173,000 more people.
Does it actually count down, or does it just say, this is your number in the queue? Did it tell you where the queue's up to?
No, it just told me my number, and I check it every day, stupidly.
That's fascinating that it tells you the number. I've never seen that before. That's interesting.
Wow.
That's a whole separate show about whether that should have been a good idea or not.
That's an SRE pulling a joke on us. That's what that is.
That's really interesting. You know it just picks a random number, right?
Right.
Yeah, I signed up, but it said I was fourth in the queue, and it still hasn't got to me.
Well, I think we're about out of time, fellas.
We are, so, absolutely.
Thank you, George, for coming on the show. Before we wrap up, very quick question. Did either of you watch Game of Thrones, the new season?
No.
First episode came out.
I want to be, but I'm not caught up yet.
Yeah. Well, go onto YouTube and do a search for recap, and there's this a few videos where they'll kind of recap seasons 1 to 7, but it was a good opener. So
my problem is I've read books.
No, you're one of those people, aren't you? The books are so much better.
It's not.
He had to tell you right away too.
It's not.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's not like, even.
What is it going to be first? Is it going to be that I'm a vegan or I read the book?
I read the book and I use Arch.
It's honestly not. You are a fine one to talk, Jonathan Peloton Bacon. So I should shut up if I was you. It's not. It's not even that I necessarily think the books are better. The point is that I read them first because they were around for 50 years before the TV program was, and then when the TV program, I watched the first series, and the whole thing, all the stuff that you have to do to take a book and turn it into a TV show, you know, you've got to cut a whole bunch of stuff out and a whole bunch of subsidiary characters. I spent the whole time mapping it back to the book in my head and going, oh, hang on, both of those, that woman there is these two different characters in the book, and it just confused the hell out of me, so I stopped watching it. I'm sure it would have been fine. Now that the show is ahead of the books, I don't want to watch the show because I'll get spoiled as to what's happening. Maybe it's completely different. No one really knows. But that's why. There's no real hipster I was first thing here. It's just I picked that one.
No, we're sticking with the I was first thing.
Yeah, me too. Enjoy your PBR later, man.
I can totally imagine if you're watching the show, don't read the books because it will confuse you a bit because they're not the same.
I watched the first. I was introduced via the show and I tried the first book. And for me, the problem I had with the books is they're so. It made Dune look easy. It's so many characters. I was like,
yeah, this seemed very complicated.
I read fiction for fun. I just can't. It was just too much for me.
I just also think with that kind of story, I just think that the visual medium of TV can offer so much as well. Like, I just think it's, you know, people like it in both ways, right? People like the books or people like TV. I personally, for that kind of thing, I would never want to watch a TV show about a business book. I would not want to watch, you know, the TV version of the first 90 days.
Oh, can you imagine?
The horrendous.
The awfulness of it. And everyone with huge smiles where it goes, ching, and the light glints on them the whole time. glad handling guys in grey suits smiling at you with massive, awful blonde hair. God, can you imagine what they'd be like? That'd be terrible. Like those, you know, the corporate videos that you occasionally see. Or indeed the Microsoft release thing that we did at the live show.
Yeah. It's new. Starring the one and only Ted Hager.
That was terrible. Right, so, yes, thank you very much, George, for joining us. We do very much appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Are you doing anything interesting that you want to tell people about, or is your chance to mention if you're speaking places or going places? Or
I'll be in Barcelona for KubeCon. That is at the end of May. I don't know the exact dates, but if you're around, I am around. Stop by and say hello. And
yes.
Always find me around. Event. I'm on Twitter, at CastroJO, if you want to make fun of me.
Yeah, you're also 100% different person to Popey as well, which was quite impressive. So
I do my best. Good to know where I stand. You're like, God, Popey's not answering.
You know what? We didn't even ask him. You are actually first choice.
Really? Oh, yeah. I gotta go with Popey all the time. It's the accent, you know.
It is the accent and his dreamy eyes, according to my wife. So,
it's that hair. It's that Elvis hair, man.
Good stuff. Well, thanks, George, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Cheers.